All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
When talking about the first generation experience, one of the most important conversations that I want us to have is about cultural assimilation. And cultural assimilation is defined as a process in which a minority group or culture comes to resemble a society's majority group and assimilate the values, behaviors, as well as the beliefs, whether that means fully or partially. And the history of the United States as a nation, Western countries, and really creating policies and practices, whether that means through education and boarding schools, right? When we're thinking about indigenous populations within the United States, and many of them lost their languages, their cultures, right? And it shows up in so many other ways and intersects in so many other forms, including telling everyone that they need to speak English, right? Other languages are not welcomed. The strategic violence against cultures, the loss of languages, is an ongoing phenomenon that continues until today. So I want to talk about what does it mean for, as a first generation person, being in a different place from your parents, and what does it mean for us to create connections to our cultures in spaces that often want us to assimilate to the dominant culture, right? What are some connections that we have redefined and created for ourselves? So I have my Cuban dance teacher, Leilani, for this particular episode, and we're going to hear her perspective and experience around what are some ways and aspects of her cultural identity that she still holds dear to her heart.
My family was very stringent on not whitewashing. Mm. As kids, I went to a Cuban school. I spoke Spanish up until I learned English, I think, in high school. I started talking in high school. Our community was multiracial, multi-ethnic, you know, lower class, but it was beautiful, right?
On the season of The Labyrinth of the First Gen, we will explore a conversation about what we carry with us and what we redefine. We are pioneers just by simply existing.
My name is Leilani Maria Chirino Moran. I'm a Cuban from Miami. The Cuban ties are very strong, even though I was raised most of, you know, in Miami. But yeah, I'm a Cuban from Miami.
And when you say specifically Miami, you emphasize a place in the United States. Why do you identify with that specific place so strongly?
You know, so I never really left Miami until I moved. And when I moved from Miami, I realized, wow, the U.S. is a very scary place. You know, Miami's just so different, right? They call it the capital of Latin America for a reason. And growing up in Miami, I never really understood what being American, and I put them quotation marks, means, because growing up, you know, whether you're from South America, whether you're from Cuba, whether you're from Mexico, you're American, right? All the continents are America, right? And so I never understood the term and how it's used here in the U.S. until I left Miami. So yeah, I feel like Miami is just very unique place in the U.S.
Leilani talked about how Miami is not only a unique place, but she feels lucky. She grew up and went to school in Miami.
I feel I'm very lucky that I grew up in Miami, which was super diverse. I went to a large public university, Florida International University, in Miami for college. So, you know, it was all immigrants, all first generation immigrants. You know, you never questioned yourself. You all struggled together, but you never questioned your identity. You're like, yeah, I speak Spanglish, you know. Like, right? Like, there was no question your identity. But then leaving that and feeling alone and feeling completely alone. Right now, I do many jobs, but I'm a medical student at the University of Pennsylvania. Wow. And it is the most isolating experience of my life to be at considered a top institution in this country, and to feel like you're the other. And I never understood what a microaggression was or a macroaggression. Those are terms I have learned recently. And you know, now I had taken for granted being in an environment with other immigrants and first generation immigrants, and now where I'm the only person of color in my class. I mean, that messes with you. It messes with your mind.
And I'm glad that you mentioned that, because also my experience as being like first generation and then going to university where it was a private white university. I had very traumatic experiences from like undergrad and also like grad school. And it's, you know, education is something that I value, but I don't know at what extent or what am I willing to lose when I go into these environments, right? Because it's a very painful environment, especially like when you're the only one.
I left to dance full time. Right? And that's how we met. Because dancing and teaching dance was the only way I felt like human. Right? Like you're saying, like being in these white spaces as a POC, as a first generation American, as an immigrant, is very traumatic and very isolating.
According to the Education Advisory Board in the United States, 33% of first-generation students leave college within 3 years of starting. And this is often contributed to a variety of different factors, including having financial barriers, having lack of support, so experiencing things like culture shock when going to a university, especially if you came from a low-income background.
There is no support. And then there's this, that's because one thing, like in Cuba, you could be a doctor and be a dancer and you do whatever you want, you know, nobody's telling you what to do. And like but here it's like you have to go one way, like you go undergrad, you have to go to grad school, and you have to follow this path, right? And when you know, people would ask, oh, what are you like, are you going to the bar to go drink or whatever? I'm like, no, I'm gonna go teach a dance class. And people stare at you like you're crazy, you know, like, and then they ask you, what do you teach? Salsa? And they say it like that. And I'm just like, I teach Afro-Cuban folklore. And they stare at you like you're some abnormal freak. And like, it's just so uncomfortable. Like, uncomfortable is the word, you know, it's just uncomfortable being a first generation American who's very proud of their culture in a white space. And yeah, I feel you going to these private schools is a very traumatic experience.
So we always ask our guests that come on the show, what does the term first generation mean to you? And how does it show up when we're talking about your own identity?
For me, it means a lot of conflict of being raised in the U.S. with family that's not from has not been in the U.S. for many generations, right? And that conflict that it creates, and not just with the family, but also the conflict with, you know, other people in this country that have been here for many generations and don't quite understand that you don't have the same experiences. And so it's like a first generation experiences, right? Compared to your family and compared to other people that may have been here for many generations. So whether that's born outside or born here, but raised here, right? Compared to your parents. I would say that for me is the definition of, but also, you know, first to have experiences in this country, right? Of our families, at least mine, they come here and it's work, right? To send money back home. And they don't experience the luxuries that the U.S. has to offer, right?
Leilani is referring to the money that immigrants as well as migrants who are working in the United States, the money that they usually send back home to their families, also called remittances. In 2022, there was an average of $142 billion of remittances to Latin America and the Caribbean being sent back home from people in the United States. Immigrants sending back money to their families in places like the Philippines, Vietnam, Bangladesh, El Salvador, and Honduras. It makes up a significant amount of the global domestic product. For example, in the Philippines, remittances make up 10% of the GDP. So this is very important for not only the families that are receiving the money, but also for the economies of developing countries as well.
And being able to go to school and to study whatever you want, right? That's the luxury. Being able to travel, right? They don't have those experiences. So when I was growing up and, you know, wanting to study or travel, like that was just not an option. And so all those conflicts of US versus not US, being in the US, that makes any sense. I think that's first generation in my head.
There's many opinions on those that embrace the first generation label and those that feel that it might not necessarily be necessary. I wanted to get a perspective from Leilani, her opinions on that, and if she feels that having this first generation label is something that is actually necessary.
It has its good and its bad. I think it helps me validate that my upbringing was very different from the upbringings of my family members in Cuba that don't have the privileges that I have, right? So it wouldn't be fair for me to say I am Cuban because I, did not grow up in a dictatorship, right? Mm-hmm. And so, but also I had a very different experience than other kids that had, whose parents and grandparents and great-grandparents have been here for many generations, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're kind of stuck in the middle between people that have been many generations in the U.S., and people in your home country who don't have the privileges that you have. And it's a very unique experience. And I think labeling it helps validate that it is a unique experience, that it has its both good and it's very bad, right? It's good. I'm fluent in Spanish, more fluent in Spanish actually than in English, ironically enough. But it's also the bad, the traumas of, you know, feeling stuck. And all that comes with it. So I think even, like I agree, having labels sometimes, you know, causes conflict, but I think at the same time, it helps validate that our experiences are unique.
A recurring theme that came up the first gens that I spoke to was the idea of this conflict, right? Not only were we talking about conflict that it's experienced outside of the home or household, but also conflict with your own parents and sometimes your own family.
I mean, I still have conflicts all the time with my mom about, you know, because her mentality is still, you know, old school Cuban, not even modern Cuban, old school Cuban, you know, and we clash a lot. And that's one of the reasons I left Miami, was to create a space, you know, to find yourself, right? However cheesy that sounds, and to come up with your own version of your identity that's not tied to your parents. But the things that have helped me is, you know, trying to objectively see the good and the bad. You know, we all have our cultures, all have good and bad things. Our upbringings have good and bad things. And I think having that separation for me allowed me to see, wow, my culture is very beautiful. There are many beautiful things. I love how we talk. I love how we walk. I love how, you know, I love our music. I love our dancing. And so what has helped me is, you know, keeping that good and not just keeping it, but sharing it, because there's not a big or any Cuban community here in Philadelphia where I'm at right now. But the fact that I teach Cuban dances, right, that's how I met with you, that, you know, that has helped me kind of, you know, that's like, it helped me come to peace with myself and my identity. And it's like, I had the privilege of growing up in this country, but at the same time, those are, you know, they're things that I love about my culture that I want to keep and that I want to give to my children. But there's also some bad things about my culture that I don't want to give to my children, you know, that I grew up with. And so being able to try to take a step back and objectively look at the good and the bad has really helped me come to terms with a lot of things.
We're going to take a quick pause and continue the conversation when we return. The Labyrinth of the First Gen would like to announce a call to action. We hope that you are currently enjoying the show, and we want to hear feedback from you. So if you are listening on this show on any of iTunes platforms, Spotify, as well as Google Podcasts, please rate the show. Let us know what you think. And as they say, sharing is caring. So share this episode with a friend.
And we are back. This is the Labyrinth of the First Gen.
What does it mean to be first generation right now at this moment? And it wasn't different for you a year or two ago.
I think now, you know, it's almost like a sense of pride. Mm-hmm. Like maybe a few years ago, I didn't have so much pride mm-hmm. in being first generation. Again, because I just saw the negative of having to struggle and like why you guys have this podcast, having to navigate everything on your own. And your other friends are immigrants or first generation mm-hmm. and also lost just as you are. And so you really have no one to ask for advice. Because again, living in this country is very difficult. And unless you're born into a lot of money, you really have to work really hard. And so I think, you know, I never really had a lot of pride. But more recently, you know, especially now with, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement really taking, again, like the spotlight that it should have always had. Mm-hmm. It's a sense of pride now. It's like, I'm glad that I was not raised in an environment where white is right. Mm-hmm. I was not raised in that environment. It's the exact opposite. It was kind of fear the gringos. Cubans have a lot of pride to an extreme, I think. But now more than ever, having that identity makes me very proud that my family was very stringent on not whitewashing us kids. I went to a Cuban school. I spoke Spanish up until I learned English, I think, in high school. I started talking in high school. Our community was multiracial, multi-ethnic, you know, lower class, but it was beautiful, right? And again, our families are very mixed. You know, we didn't grow up with that hate. And And now, again, now I feel pride that I am a first generation American, and I did not grow up with this hate and this fear of people of color. I mean, it's crazy. And now, like a few years ago, I would not have had that pride that I have now.
You identify as a Cuban from Miami, first generation, obviously. What are other profound identities that you often identify as?
The other one that's conflicting also, but I identify as mixed race, which I think is something that us Latinos really struggle with, right? Because often, again, in the U.S., they I feel like they try to box us in, white, black, Asian, Hispanic, Latino, and, you know, that's something I've struggled with a lot, is identify, like trying to find my racial and ethnic identity. You know, because when I started filling out like college application, scholarship application, they ask you, and it's very literally black and white, black, white, Asian, Latino, non-white. It was just so confusing. And it's like, well, in my family, we have a little bit of everything.
Nationwide, this conversation around race and or ethnicity really is a point of contention for a lot of Latinos that are in the United States. But for example, in the 2020 census, some 45 million Latinos were recorded as identifying with a mysterious alternative to what the federal government considers to be the major racial group. So they chose to identify as some other race because they didn't necessarily see themselves checking one box, or they didn't find adequate enough descriptions around a mixed race identity.
I feel like I have to explain my existence every other day. Mm-hmm. You know, like, right? You know, because it's so frustrating. People are like, oh, but you don't look. And it's like, what is your definition of looks Latina? Mm-hmm. Right? And like, one of my closest friends is Chinese, and she's Cuban Puerto Rican, right? Mm-hmm. Like, even though her ancestry is, she's racially, you know, Chinese, right? I feel like every other day I have to explain my existence and my multiple identities. Like, you can't be a doctor and be a dancer. Mm-hmm. You can't be, you know, Asian and be Hispanic. I get asked mm-hmm. all the time, like, oh, you're Cuban. Oh, you don't look Cuban. And I'm just there thinking, like, you know, we have like every race under the sun in that island, right? Like, what in your mind does Cuban look like? If I walk down the street, maybe someone might confuse me as white, but I have no Anglo in me, right? Like, and it's something that I finally came to terms with. I cannot describe myself as being one race, and I'm okay with that. So, like, that's another self-identifying trait that I've, you know, have grappled with over the years is race for us.
At the beginning of this interview, you said to me that you wish that you had something like this podcast 10 or 20 years ago. So let's say that you are speaking to the first gens that are in the United States right now, or are in other parts of the world. What kind of advice would you give them?
That living in this country is a shit show. And hold on to those that what you love of home and what you love about your upbringing, because it'll help you survive. Living in this country is not easy. You know, it's very telling when you have family that fled a dictatorship to say, I kind of want to go back. You know, so I think you know, I feel, especially as a first generation American, sometimes you want to expel your culture in a way to try and fit in. And again, mm-hmm. I hate using the word Americanize yourself, because I feel like America is the entire, you know, many continents of this hemisphere. USize yourself. Or how do they say? There's a word for it that I dislike.
Like,
assimilate,
yeah.
And for me, you know, it's not, for me, the word assimilation has, you know, has meant for me, whitewash yourself. Mm-hmm. Right? And I think, and so I struggled with that, you know, in my, you know, 30 something years of life, and being in this country. And I think my advice for first generation is hold on to, you know, what makes you feel comfortable in your body. If that's the music of your parents' home, if that's the food, if the dancing, the art, you know, hold on to that, because, you know, trying to assimilate can be very traumatic, I think, for incoming immigrants and first generation Americans who feel the pressure to assimilate. Right, especially when you're young and you know you're a child, a teenager, going to school and being exposed to everything English, mm-hmm. even though we have so many beautiful languages in this country, mm-hmm. but you know, and the kind of wanting to have this one culture, right? And America, that's not what the U.S. is about, you know. And so I would just hold on to those things that, and again, there's bad and good things about everybody's culture, right? But hold on to those good things that make you feel comfortable in your own skin, and not to feel, you're going to feel pressure to assimilate, but there's, it's not a point. That's not what the U.S. is supposed to be, I think.
I want to take this time out to say Sereme, thank you to Leilani for coming on the show. And I'm always so grateful to hear people share their experiences and really just connect to people on so many different levels. And part of the reason why I created the show is really talking about things that, you know, I was going through, or things that I was navigating. And it's just so comforting to hear that, you know, you're not the only one. So thank you so much, Leilani, for coming on the show. We have two more episodes left up to the end of the season. So with that, thank you for listening. Please share. As I always say, be in peace, folks, and see you later.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.